want to welcome you to my podcast series. I'm not sure what to call it yet, but I will come up with a name, a good one too. I'm doing these podcasts for a couple of reasons. One is selfish, and doing it also as a service. Well, the selfish reason is that, well, I miss teaching. When I left the ministry in the spring of 2010, I was unemployed for a time, but my next job that lasted a year was teaching in a local university. Even though I wasn't teaching something I was passionate about, English as a second language, I am passionate about the vocation of teaching. And so I enjoyed that part of it. I suppose I would compare it to running. I like to run. I do it almost every day. It's winter here right now, and the roads are treacherous, so I can't run outside safely. I have to go to the gym and run on a treadmill. I prefer running outside, but a treadmill will do, as long as I can run. Same with teaching. I love teaching. What I think is of utmost importance for people, spirituality, meaning, ideas, but not really passionate about English as a second language, but if that's all I have, at least I'm teaching. So these podcasts are going to provide a way for me to teach something that I'm passionate about. The service reason is that many people on the Lasting Supper have mentioned how they like what I have to say and would like to hear more, believe it or not. Many have also mentioned that they miss sermons or messages, and now that they've left the church, they would appreciate being able to have access to more teaching. Even today, I got a tweet from a young woman who said she was very intrigued and interested in what I had to say and would like me to explain myself. She didn't mean that in a derogatory way, but she's just curious. And this podcast might not be for everyone. Perhaps you are one of those people, though, who would like to have a weekly meditation or message or thought or sermon or whatever you want to call it. Some have also mentioned that they're too busy to read every day and prefer listening to a podcast on their mobile device. So that's why I'm going to endeavor to make these podcasts available each week for you. Today I want to talk about my relationship with the Bible. The Bible for me is, I consider it revolutionary literature. And I say revolutionary because this is what the Bible became to me. In fact, it was the Bible itself that fueled my struggle with professional ministry. I believe it was the Bible that eventually led to my leaving the ministry. It was also my revolutionary reading of the Bible that brought about my departure, temporary or permanent, I don't know yet, from the organized church. The Bible, to me, has been a major player in my own inner revolution, as well as a major player in informing my own revolution within the cloak of ministry and within the walls of the church. I'm well aware that for many, the Bible has been used as a weapon to squash any revolution in their own hearts and lives and in their worlds. I know this and have experienced the Bible being used as a weapon against me. For many, the Bible represents a means of cruel limitation and control. My hope is that through these series, we would be relieved of that idea, maybe, and perhaps the Bible would regain its status as a revolutionary reading. When read the way it should be read. I'm also well aware that the Bible is dated. It's old. It's ancient, sure. It talks about a lot of stuff that doesn't mean anything anymore. And I know it can't be relied upon for fact. It is old. It's often defended as historical, scientific, and ideological fact. But in my mind, this doesn't negate its revolutionary character at its core. I think the stories of the prophets indicate that their impassioned thinking was fueled by the law, the writings. If you read the prophets, for example, by Abraham Heschel, you'll really get a feel for the prophets' vision of justice and unity and faithfulness that was fired by the truth of the Torah. Their passion for truth drove their lives. And the story of Jesus indicates to me too, that he was motivated not only by his personal vision, but by what he considered to be absolutely, passionately true. The story is clear that he came in the spirit of the Old Testament prophets and brought new meaning and force to the truth of the writings. In fact, so much so that he inspired so many more writings after him, even though he didn't write himself. I've had a strange relationship and journey with the Bible. Although I was baptized as a baby in the Anglican Communion, I went to church now and then growing up. But I remember when I first became a born-again Christian, I was 16 years old. I was invited by a friend of mine to a Baptist youth group night, and we played floor hockey in a gym. Then at the end of the game, the youth pastor gave a talk and then asked who wanted to get saved. And I remember just putting up my hand just because everybody else did. And another guy came around and put a small tract in my hand called the Four Spiritual Laws. And I'm sure many of you have heard of that and read it yourself. He told me to go out in the hall and read it, and someone would be right along to be, you know, take me through it. So I did. I went out into the hall and I looked at the pictures and the tract. Being an artist, I wasn't much interested in the words, but another guy eventually came along and prayed the sinner's prayer with me and sent me home. And that was it. I remember coming in the door of my house and saying hi to my mom, who was watching TV. And I said, I became a Christian. I got saved tonight. She said, oh, that's nice. And then I went to bed, and that was it. But the youth pastor, his name was Bruce, took me under his wing. He was a young school teacher. His wife was super hot, so we loved going over to his place for youth meetings. And he gave me a Bible, what we call a parallel Bible, the very parallel version. It has four translations running down the page side by side. And he gave me a pack of colored pencils, and we'd go to his house and just study the Bible for hours, underlining the verses using this complicated color code that he had. He would sit there and engage my mind in an open way about the Bible, and I really learned how to think independently with that man. I loved it. I guess it was the blend of friendship with intellectual curiosity and his gorgeous wife. He wasn't afraid to put any question to the text. He was revolutionary in his thinking. He taught me how to do that. Unfortunately, and you guessed it, inevitably, he was removed as the pastor, youth pastor, because of his intellectual curiosity, and he and his wife moved way up north to teach in another school. I completely lost touch with him. I still have that worn-out but colorful Bible in my library. I'm looking at it right now, and it brings back a lot of fond memories. Bruce brought my intellect to life. It was because of him that the Bible meant revolution to me. I went to Bible college when I was 18, and I started out as a music major. I had one more year to graduate as a music major, but I met Lisa, and we fell instantly in love with each other. But she was interested in missions, and I was a music major, and she wasn't quite sure how that was going to work. I didn't either. And suddenly and miraculously, I say that tongue-in-cheek, I felt a miraculous call to switch majors, and I switched to Bible and theology. So I was able to stay in relationship with Lisa, and I took some courses from a couple of biblical scholars I'll never forget, Ben Aker and Ben Saglambeni and others. I took Greek and Hebrew and everything necessary to become a serious student of the Bible, and these teachers were like my youth pastor, Bruce. They infused in me this passion for the Bible and using our intellects to understand it and unlock its mysterious revolutionary power. The interesting thing about my relationship with the Bible so far, though, is that my education in it was still rather conservative. I mean, you know, I went to a Pentecostal Bible school and I went to a seminary, highly respected, but Billy Graham was on its board of directors. And I mean, it was fairly conservative. But its revolutionary power had been proven in my life, the Bible. And I saw how the Bible was a revolutionary voice, not only for, but against the church. And I also saw the ramifications it could have on your life if you wanted to live a revolutionary life fueled by its truth and words. But it was still a rather conservative upbringing, I must say. I went on in my studies. I went for my master's in biblical studies and theology at Gordon Conwell in Boston. And, you know, it's where I started drifting into the deep end. I remember the real turning point for me. I was reading a book by Breach, The Silence of Jesus. And this guy meticulously analyzed what he believed were the then agreed upon eight core sayings of Jesus. And by the end of the book, I was absolutely devastated, even though up to now, the Bible had been a powerful influence in my life, and I felt free and liberated enough to ask the text itself the tough questions. it had never really occurred to me to question the Bible itself. I mean, its sources, you know, the authors, its historicity, its intent, its veracity. When I finished the book, I felt the ground move under my feet, and I felt myself slipping down this dark, deep hole. I mean, you know, if the Bible as a collection of documents is just a bunch of documents written by fallible men that is dated and are not historically true, then nothing is true. If the Bible says Jesus said something and it's been proven that he didn't actually say it, then where does the surgery end? You know, like, it's like taking off, going into hospital for an operation to take off a gangrenous toe, and then the foot, and then you go up to the knee, and then up to the hip, and then the torso. I mean, where do you stop? It was like, you know, you've heard the saying, the surgery was a success. Unfortunately, the patient died. It was like I was in the middle of a nightmare, and I was freaking out so bad that Lisa had to actually physically shake me to come to my senses. It was horrifying. But this began the next leg of my journey of appreciating the text for what it was, a kind of sign pointing to what is true. It's not the truth. It's a sign pointing toward it. It's just a sign constructed by men who had seen something and did their best to explain it. And they used the tools at their disposal at the time, you know, poetry and prophecy and other writings, their own philosophies, metaphor, story, parable, oral tradition, on and on it goes. I had to learn to use the text, the Bible, as a pretty good sign and let it do what it could to point me to the truth. I had permission now, though, to deconstruct this sign, to analyze it, and to reconstruct it again, maybe improve upon it, as long as I didn't contaminate, you know, the original builder's vision of what they believed they saw. I had to appreciate what they saw, sure, but I now realized I had to empower myself to self-validate what I saw. And you know what? Its revolutionary power became even greater for me. This is when I got introduced to the mystics and the revolutionaries of our own traditions and others, the church fathers, Meister Eckhart, other theologians and philosophers, Thomas Merton, Henry Nouwen, William Stringfellow. And through these people, I was introduced to Eastern religions and philosophies, Zen Buddhism, Tibetan Buddhism, Hinduism, Islam, Sufi mysticism, and so on. I was also introduced to Gandhi, Mother Teresa, Martin Luther King Jr., many more, all of whom read and were inspired and influenced by writings, religious texts, and scriptures. Another significant moment for me was when I was reading William Stringfellow's An Ethic for Christians and Other Aliens in a Strange Land. Great book. He talked about how both Christians and Jewish resistance fighters during the Second World War would get together and just read the Bible in secret. It was, in their minds, revolutionary reading that fueled their passion to resist the Nazi regime at the time. Oh, and have you heard of Pussy Riot? They are an all-woman Russian punk rock band who played in the main basilica in Central Square last year in Moscow, praying for Mother Teresa to remove Putin from power. Their protest only lasted about 42 seconds when three of them were arrested, and they were unfortunately sentenced to years of hard labor in a prison camp in remote Russia. You should follow their story. It's really quite amazing. But I read an article recently where it states that they were reading what they were reading in their prison cells. They were reading philosophers like Foucault and Judith Butler, Slavoj Žižek, and get this, the Bible. They say they are reading revolutionary material. Now, these aren't your Bible-thumping evangelists, but serious revolutionary artists attempting to bring down the tyrannical rule of Putin and Russia. They have become a major feminist, prophetic, and political and revolutionary voice, not only in Russia, but around the world. So, my relationship with the Bible has been a strange one. It's definitely a significant part of my life. Even if I were to throw out all the Bibles in my possession, it would still be there inside of me, speaking to me on a daily basis. It's sewn into the very fabric of my identity as a teacher and as a Christian. But it's also like a dangerous weapon In the wrong hands, it can do incredible destruction. But in the right hands, it can bring about incredibly powerful revolutions.